Our next presenter is Dr. Arthur Patrick. Dr. Patrick is Senior Honorary Research Fellow at Avondale College. He holds a DMIN degree from Christian Theological Seminary and a PhD from the University of Newcastle. He has pastored in New Zealand and in the United States and taught at Avondale and La Sierra University. In past years, he has also served as director of the Ellen G. White Adventist Research Center for the South Pacific Division of Seventh-day Adventists. The title of his presentation, which you have in your binder, is The Questions on Doctrine Event, Contrasting Perceptions, Their Impact, and Potential. Welcome, Dr. Patrick.
Thank you, Dr. Burt. Last night, to use the language of the book of Daniel, my sleep broke from me. And so at 4 o'clock this morning, I wrote 2 minutes that I need to read to you. Before you is a paper, 13,000 words, that distills my perception of the Questions on Doctrine event. The decision to write it and to come here was not an easy one. The November 2006 year was a busy one. It included such events as Avondale College being accredited to offer PhD degrees in a range of disciplines, including history, theology, education, and health. So honorary research fellows are volunteers who can write such things as an annotated guide for higher degree students who want to focus on Adventist studies. Also, I had presented a colloquium looking at whether Adventist studies is a fractious adolescent or a maturing adult, and had opted for the latter concept. Next, I was starting to write a series on key reformers like Wycliffe, Huss, Tyndall, and Luther for signs in South Pacific and North America. And I was asking myself if we understand and affirm better historic reformers than contemporary ones. And even more crucially, I had just about completed an article for the Journal of Religious History, entitled Contextualizing Tensions in Seventh-day Adventism, a Constant Process of Struggle and Rebirth? So that article was following up from an article I presented to the same journal 20 years earlier, and this one looked at 20 different doctoral dissertations and suggested that while many believers had not reached consensus on the issues, the future looked rather hopeful. Then, it's easy to be misunderstood. At the heart of this discussion is the ministry of Ellen White. If you look at footnote 41, page 57, of the script that is before you, this has been the main theme of my writing for the past 25 years. And when I tried in 1991 to suggest that our past does not embarrass us, but in fact can be understood and affirmed, Elder Joe Cruz felt that, in a published letter, this was the most dangerous and deceptive article that he had read in 40 years plus of ministry. So I tried again in 2004, and in the very beautiful volume that you will shortly have, on page 116, Russell, you tell me that this was the most must rank among the most disingenuous material ever to blight a Seventh-day Adventist denominational publication. So it is easy to be misunderstood, and I took all of this into account before I said yes. The title says what I think this is about. An event that is crucial for Adventists to understand. And I would like us to listen to Coleridge's table talk and put the lantern on the front of the boat. Questions on Doctrine is the most important of the Adventist publications that developed from a constructive, though flawed, attempt to explain Seventh-day Adventist faith to fundamentalist evangelical Christians in North America. Both fundamentalist evangelical and Adventist enthusiasts who participated in written and oral dialogue or reflection between 1949 and 1977 were confronted by cautioners who posed substantive questions. Crucial primary sources that illumine the era and the historical process are now widely available. The issues, problems, and outcomes are explored and contextualized by a score of doctoral dissertations and a plethora of other studies. Therefore, the impact and potential of the book can now be assessed more coherently than was possible during the foundational years. In hindsight, the QOD event sheds light on a cluster of related issues such as Adventism, self-understanding, identity, administrative procedures, pastoral care, and mission. I don't need to read much of the rest of the paper because it reviews what Dr. Knight has excellently summarized for us, the event. Dr. Nam has told us of the responses to that publication, that event. My fellow Australian has told you his perception of that event. And I have struggled, Russell, to understand in more than 20 of your books what you call the ills of God's church. You are a physician. We come to the patient and we agree that there are ills in God's church. You diagnose those ills, I diagnose them, and our diagnoses do not cohere. So here is my alternative explanation to what my colleague has just shared with you. We start with the introduction. I will read the lead sentences of major paragraphs and direct you where I'm reading entire paragraphs. The impact of questions on doctrine derives from the nature of Seventh-day Adventism, the mid-20th century context that birthed the QOD initiative in North America, and the various perceptions of the process and of the book that have been developed and promulgated in various parts of the world during the past half century. Adventism began as a trans-denominational Protestant movement, nourished by apocalyptic thought, cast in a premillennialist mold, infused with a passion for doctrinal reconstruction. During the 1950s, the movement was recovering from the crisis of World War II, confronting daunting challenges and experiencing exciting opportunities. Official initiatives of the mid-20th century sought to offer a centrist stance in explicating and defending the church's faith. Even before QOD was published, it was hailed by a conference president in North New Zealand as a foretaste of a renewed and renewable Adventism. These early rival perceptions of questions on doctrine have persisted into the 21st century and characterize opposing currents within contemporary Adventism. Conflict about questions on doctrine has persisted for many decades, in part because some of the important primary sources have been unknown or little known until recent years, enabling serious misconceptions to be repeated without effective correction. This paper will be misunderstood unless it acknowledges the geographical and personal limitations of the perspective that it offers. We can pass over some of that material and come to page 50, the last two sentences in the text. It is ever the responsibility of the church and the individual member to monitor information and assess its reliability. The relevant questions are as exacting as they are unavoidable. Does the information have a valid basis in biblical exegesis? Is it historically accurate? Is its theological content informed by God's leading throughout the history of his people in Bible times, during 20 centuries of Christianity, as well as within Adventism? What of its viability for building sustainable faith and facilitating effective mission? In the providence of God, Adventists in 2007 still have an opportunity to embrace the awesome potential of the Questions on Doctrine event, experienced only in part a half century ago. So we need to hear the initial testimony. To understand the QOD event, it is essential to identify and hear all the potential witnesses whose testimony might be expected to illumine the historical process and its variant interpretations. The enthusiasts from both Adventist and fundamentalist evangelicals represent the two principal groupings whose envisioning and risk-taking facilitated the QOD event and the constructive aspects of its outcomes. The next main paragraph in entirety. Andreessen was not a participant in the conversations that created the book. Indeed, his forthright campaign began in part because he was not included, even amongst perhaps 250 readers of the QOD manuscript. Was his exclusion because key Adventist participants deemed he was a potential source of opposition? Or was it simply due to such factors as his advancing age? Once debates flared, Andreessen had no opportunity to review the extensive documentation that later investigators have combed through so carefully. Such researchers as Leroy Moore offer conclusive evidence that Andreessen's major charges are in the main without factual foundation. Is it therefore fair to the great Dane of Adventism to continue to cite him as an authority on the QOD issue? This paper presupposes that to understand Adventism, it must be examined within its founding homeland and in its multiple geographical expressions, even the so-called Antipodes. Therefore, this section will offer a fleeting glimpse of the profound impact of QOD within the territory of Earth now known as the South Pacific Division of the Seventh-day Adventist Church, most specifically Australia and New Zealand. If to effervesce is to exhibit fervor, excitement, liveliness, the third quarter of the 20th century was an era of effervescence within South Pacific Adventism. This was a time of profound disappointment for many believers. They interpreted World War II even more than World War I as a war that would end all wars by ushering in the battle of the great day of God Almighty. A city on the island continent was bombed repeatedly. Enemy submarines and an airplane actually reached Australia's first city. Surely the kings of the East were about to leap from the bridging islands and overrun the vast, thinly populated territory of our agricultural nation. Banner headlines announced advent as certainties. Hitler was marching to his doom. The time of trouble such as never was here. When hostilities ended, Adventists asked why they were still on this rebellious planet. Of course, they were certain this would only be a little time of peace. New interpretation of startling prophecies flourished. During 1958 in Christchurch, the crowds came to hear about the imminent oil war of Armageddon. Adventism heard a medley of voices. Taylor Bunch suggested that we could learn from the Exodus and Advent movements and stop wandering in the wilderness. Others focused on Christ-centered preaching. Heppenstall threw back the horizons of Adventism on law and sanctuary. Adventists, Froome said, are continuators and consummators of the uncompleted Reformation in the direct line of such spiritual dissentients as the Waldenses, Wycliffeites, Hussites, Lutherans, Baptists, and Wesleyans. And this movement of destiny was about to fulfill Revelation 18, lighten the earth with its glory. However, these confident voices from the Northern Hemisphere were often outshouted by the John the Baptist fervency of earnest locals. Even during the crisis years of World War II, Lewis Weir was galvanizing hope with a spiritual Armageddon far bigger than anything that could be fought in the Valley of Megiddo. The Brinsmead family in Queensland had been doubly disappointed. Christ had not come. And the hope offered by the Seventh-day Adventist reform movement was, it seemed to them, merely yet another deception. Fortunately, Raymond Cottrell had drawn together everything that the Bible and the Spirit of Prophecy said on crisis and victory, putting the latter rain in the right place, according to the Brinsmead schema. Likewise, Herbert Douglas at Atlantic Union College was giving the true order of last day events. Wieland and Short were warning the church of the peril of antichrist-centered preaching. Also, Robert Brinsmead discovered incomplete but gripping fragments of the writings of Jones and Wagoner. Obviously, 1888 re-examined was the answer. Jones had it right in the consecrated way to Christian perfection. Daniels, that great pioneer of the Australian and New Zealand mission, put Ellen White's convictions about 1888 into sharp, authentic focus. Christ Our Righteousness, 1926. The ingredients for the only true Adventism seemed ready for the ultimate integration and proclamation. The church was poised for its final, glorious witness, fair as the moon, clear as the sun, and terrible as an army with banners. The little remnant could almost hear the trumpet sounding. Then the grieve experience that my colleague has alluded to. Here, all of the questions were dumped out on the Adventist table. What a problem for administrators. And they started dismissing people to solve the issues. I refer to what happened in some of the little South New Zealand congregations where I pastored. Terrible division. People no longer welcome at church. the determination to solve the problem with six words, Robert Brinsmead is of the devil. The problems escalated. Page 55, such was the conflicted context in which startling news of Adventist conversations with other Christians broken was interpreted within Australia and New Zealand from 1956 onward. The reformers asked a bevy of related questions. Might this be the ultimate compromise? Revelation 14:8 says, Babylon is fallen. Come out of her, my people. What of the miraculous punctilia moral cleansing, the final atonement? The language of the time had our church leaders carrying out the corpse of the final atonement and burying it in the graveyard of our pioneers' misconceptions. Is the papacy now in the remnant church, God's holy church, planting the tabernacles of his palace right there? Is the substance of Wieland and Short's warnings meeting dramatic confirmation? Is M.L. Andreasen courageously exposing God's remnant church as rapidly descending into apostasy? Are dire prophecies, including those of the shaking, in the process of being fulfilled right now? Thence, two streams were sourced in Australian Adventism and given volume during the crisis years from the 1940s to the 1970s. There was a great need to understand the perplexity of those honest souls who would later call themselves Concerned Brethren, and to offer them accurate information as well as effective pastoral care and nurture. There's a crying need to define Adventist identity rather than crush people under the overwhelming weight of unexamined certainties. There's a great need to rethink the relationship between corporate authority and individual responsibility. There was a pervasive need to relate Scripture and Ellen White's writings effectively. Adventism was in a dynamic period of adolescence, marked by the kind of turmoil that the wider society experienced during the turbulent 1960s. Thus, rightly or wrongly, Questions on Doctrine was interpreted as a beacon of hope and a source of despair. With the end of all things at hand, there was little time for anyone to ask whether the other side might have anything to offer except damnable heresy. So we try and assess the evidence and listen to the analysts. I try to estimate the impact and potential of Questions on Doctrine and ask, can a majority view be identified? And come to the conclusion on page 60. The Questions on Doctrine event confronted Adventism with twin demands of the 20th century: the need for its faith to be sustained by evidence, and the requirement for its faith to offer existential meaning. After 30 years sheltering from modernism in the fundamentalist camp, mid-century Adventism needed to recognize the strengths of an emergent evangelicalism that was neither fundamentalist nor modernist. Those who believed that the Adventist past must control its future sounded the bugle of retreat passionately. However, from the vantage point of 2007, it is evident that reversionary options could not meet the exigencies of the changing situation. Adventists who were unconvinced of total adequacy in the expressions of the forthright apologists of the time would be confronted with even more alarming evidence that their understandings must grow and even in some respects, change. Increasingly, such believers would face a choice: to reject their heritage altogether or to transform perceptions of their faith, identity, and mission in the light of accumulating evidence and intensifying demands for meaning. Finally, I ask, what shall we do? And offer five brief sentences along that line. First, we need to assemble, make freely available, page 61, evaluate all the primary and secondary sources that inform the current discussions of questions on doctrine in its historical, biblical, theological, and other dimensions. Secondly, we must identify all the component questions, treat them with respect, and attempt to offer adequate responses. Facilitate dialogue, even if it must include dialectic, centered on the prayerful and thorough evaluation of all the available evidence. And finally, apply the findings derived over time to the understanding of the church's identity and the implementation of its mission.